Ezekiel 25. The word of Yahweh came again unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against the Ammonites and prophesy against them, and say unto the Ammonites, Hear the word of Yahweh God. Thus saith Yahweh God, Because thou saidest, Aha, against my sanctuary when it was profaned, and against the land of Israel when it was desolate, and against the house of Judah when they went into captivity, behold, therefore I will deliver thee to the men of the east for a possession, and they shall set their palaces in thee and make their dwellings in thee. They shall eat thy fruit, and they shall drink thy milk. And I will make Rabbah a stable for camels, and the Ammonites a couching place for flocks. And ye shall know that I am Yahweh. For thus saith Yahweh God, Because thou hast clapped thine hands and stamped with the feet, and rejoiced in heart with all thy despite against the land of Israel. Behold, therefore I will stretch out mine hand upon thee, and will deliver thee for a spoil to the heathen, and I will cut thee off from the people, and I will cause thee to perish out of the countries. I will destroy thee, and thou shalt know that I am Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh God, Because that Moab and Seir do say, Behold, the house of Judah is like unto all the heathen. Therefore, behold, I will open the side of Moab from the cities, from his cities which are on his frontiers, the glory of the country, Beth, Jesh, Imoth, Baal, Meon, and Kiriah, Thaim, unto the men of the east with the Ammonites, and will give them in possession, that the Ammonites may not be remembered among the nations. And I will execute judgments upon Moab, and they shall know that I am Yahweh.
But this hatred that the Ammonites had for the children of Israel, for the Israelites, for the land of Israel, it's not really a hatred for the land of Israel. It's a hatred for the people, the Israelites, occupying the land of Israel, and against the house of Judah when they went into captivity. That this is something that must have unfolded over 400 years. It's not something that happened suddenly. That the Israelites had dominated the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Edomites, and the other tribes, surrounding tribes, since the time of the David, but really since the time of the Judges. So this hatred has always gone on. And if you look at the parable of the goats and the sheep in Matthew chapter 25, the other nations are condemned because of how they treated the sheep. And that's what we have going on here. Niggers are going to be just condemned and destroyed by God because of how they treat white people. And the same thing with Jews and Spics and every other race. The goats get judged and condemned because of how they treated us, because we are his true chosen.
They're racking up a bill and they don't even realize it.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it.
So this is the Ammonites being delivered into the hands of the men of the east, Bill. Behold, therefore I will deliver thee to the men of the east for a possession, and they shall set their palaces in thee. And I will take Rabbah, so that must be the capital of the Ammonites.
Well, that happened with that began to happen with the Babylonians, and then it happened with the Persians.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Well, we're talking, this is Ezekiel here, and this is probably, I think it was like his 10th or 11th year or whatever it said back a few chapters ago. So we're talking about maybe 596, 595 BC. So the Babylonians are coming. The Babylonians didn't only destroy Judah, but they also took a lot of the surrounding countries too in the same period of time. And then the Persians came and commanded and took over all those countries. So the men of the east are the Babylonians and then the Persians. The name of the Ammonites disappeared during that time. Just like the name of Moab disappeared. It virtually disappeared.
Verse 10 says that the Ammonites may not be remembered.
And they're not. Where are the Ammonites today? Who the fucking pointed them?
It's almost like the Israelites died with them at the same time. Like the Israelites were forgotten, you know, because of their sin. But the Israelites were resurrected in a way. I don't know, because they will be resurrected, but all these other nations, they'll never be resurrected. Because Israel was lost too. Like Israel was lost just as these other ancient nations were. But Israel's, forever, you know, it's going to be restored, but these other nations never will be. They're lost to history forever.
Right.
I just think that's interesting.
Well, is that same as when we're told that they will be as though they had never been?
Yeah. Anyone else want to make a comment on that part?
Microphone activated.
The first part of that chapter? I'll continue from verse 12. Thus saith Yahweh God, because that Edom hath dealt against the house of Judah by taking vengeance and hath greatly offended and revenged himself upon them, therefore thus saith Yahweh God, I will also stretch out mine hand upon Edom and will cut off man and beast from it, and I will make it desolate from Teman, and they of Dedan shall fall by the sword. And I will lay my vengeance upon Edom by the hand of my people Israel. And they shall do in Edom according to mine anger and according to my fury, and they shall know my vengeance, saith Yahweh God. Thus saith Yahweh God, because the Philistines have dealt by revenge and have taken vengeance with a despiteful heart to destroy it for the old hatred, therefore thus saith Yahweh God, behold, I will stretch out mine hand upon the Philistines, and I will cut off the chariot teams and destroy the remnant of the sea coast, and I will execute great vengeance upon them with furious rebukes, and they shall know that I am Yahweh when I shall lay my vengeance upon them. Praise Yahweh.
Teman was one of the notable cities of Edom. Dedan was that was like originally a Japhethite city, I believe. Dedan was one of the sons of Cush. But I think that city ended up in the hands of the Edomites and the Ishmaelites, if I'm not mistaken. Even though Dedan was one of the sons of Cush. But that, I think, reflects the mixing together of the Ishmaelites, the Edomites, the Cushites, and whatever else was there, the Canaanites, the Horites. It's became a melting pot very early in history. So this is basically just a series of prophecies against the surrounding nations for their despite for the children of Israel and Judah, who were favored by God over these surrounding nations. The Moabites, the Ammonites, the Edomites, the Philistines.
I like verse 14 too. And I will take my vengeance upon Edom by the hand of my people Israel, and they shall do in Edom according to mine anger and according to my fury. That's an inspirational verse right there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, it is. And I'm not so sure it was fulfilled in the ancient world. When the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem, the Edomites were in league. They were subject to but cooperating with the Babylonians.
Well, isn't there a tinge of pride without ego there too? I mean, it's by Yahweh's hand that we get to or that they had to, excuse me, partake in that?
I'm sorry?
I mean, by his hand, you know, being a warrior.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is that this vengeance upon Edom did not happen in the ancient world. The Edomites subjected themselves to the Babylonians. They subjected themselves to the Persians. That they shifted up into Judea, into the land of ancient land of Israel and Judah during the Persian period. They cooperated with the Persians. The Edomites were never destroyed during this period.
So we're still waiting. Sorry, Bill.
Yeah, we are still waiting. When I say this period, I mean the 6th and 5th century BC. The Edomites were never destroyed purposely. They always subjected themselves to the ruling empires. I've never seen any inscriptions bragging about the destruction of Seir or Edom or in the ancient inscriptions. The Edomites were always compliant with the empires.
Well, in that case, if it's in the future, then it still stands to be by his hand and not ours, even if we are a vehicle for it. Which, what an honor that would be, right?
Yeah, right. That's what I'm trying to drive at, is that this, some of these prophecies, you know, Edom did get laid waste, but mostly because the Edomites moved out of there into Judea and the lands of Judah and Israel. And we're going to see that when we get to Ezekiel chapter 34 and 35, right? 10 chapters from now. But that's why Edom fell into disuse, because the Edomites moved. Never because it was really destroyed, because the Edomites were subjects to the Babylonians. They were willing subjects. And there's evidence that the Edomites had actually been responsible for the destruction of the temple. And we've cited some of that. We've discussed some of the evidence in 1 Ezra chapter 4 and in the Psalms, where it states explicitly that the Edomites were the ones who raised the temple when the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem. Oh, if I could only get past this British spelling.
User disconnected.
Psalm 137. Remember, O Yahweh, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. And that is actually corroborated in 1 Ezra chapter 4. Don't ask me exactly where. But that is corroborated. I'd have to find it, and I'm not having good luck right now.
Didn't we find another cross-reference recently, Bill? For that one?
I actually do think we did, but I may not have remembered it if I didn't write it down somewhere. Edom is not mentioned in the King James Apocrypha? Come on.
Well, yes. Why do you think?
Okay, 1 Ezra chapter 4, verse 45. Thou hast also vowed to build the temple which the Edomites burned when Judea was made desolate by the Chaldees. The Chaldees being the Babylonians, right? So that's Psalm 137 and 1 Ezra 4:45 that inform us that the Edomites were actually in league. They were subject to and in cahoots, basically, with the Babylonians. Psalm 137, verse 7, with the Babylonians when the temple of Yahweh was destroyed in Jerusalem. So here in Ezekiel, the temple's not even destroyed yet. And even though this is against the Ammonites, the Philistines, all of those groups are basically in league with the Babylonians. They're all subject, they are all subject under tribute to the Babylonians at this time when Jerusalem's about to be destroyed. They're all under tribute, and they're all going to join in the destruction of Jerusalem. But the Edomites have a more particular role than the others.
I think the other cross ref. Sorry, Bill.
I'm just going to add the inscriptions actually support that. The inscriptions support that fact. I don't have them in my head, but they actually support that fact.
Was it Lamentations 4 where we found the other cross reference? And we're talking about this. The punishment of your iniquity has been completed, O daughter of Zion. He will exile you no longer, but he will punish your iniquity, O daughter of Edom. He will expose your sins. That I think that's when we were in Lamentations, we found another cross reference.
It may have been. Daughter of Edom? Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Lamentations 4. Good,
that's very good, Joe. That's very good. I should have remembered that. I should make note of that, right?
Write it down.
Look, I'll be right back. I'm squirming a little bit. I have to excuse myself a moment. I'll only be.
Yeah, no worries. All right. Do you think I should read on, David? Because. Ezekiel 26. I think we're up to it. And it came to pass in the 11th year, in the first day of the month, that the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, because that Tyrus hath said against Jerusalem, Aha, she is broken. That was the gates of the people. She is turned unto me. I shall be replenished. Now she is laid waste. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh God, Behold, I am against thee, O Tyrus, and will cause many nations to come up against thee as the sea causeth his waves to come up. And they shall destroy the walls of Tyrus and break down her towers. I will also scrape her dust from her and make her like the top of a rock. It shall be a place for the spreading of nets in the midst of the sea, for I have spoken it, saith Yahweh God. And it shall become a spoil to the nations. And her daughters which are in the field shall be slain by the sword, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. For thus saith Yahweh God, Behold, I will bring upon Tyrus Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, a king of kings from the north, with horses and with chariots and with horsemen and with companies and much people. He shall slay with the sword thy daughters in the field, and he shall make a fort against thee and cast a mount against thee and lift up the buckler against thee. And he shall set engines of war against thy walls, and with his axes he shall break down the towers. By reason of the abundance of his horses, their dust shall cover thee, thy wall shall shake at the noise of the horsemen, and of the vessels, and of the chariots, when he shall enter into the gates, as men enter into the city wherein is made a breach. With the hooves of his horses shall he tread down all thy streets. He shall slay the people by the sword, and thy strong garrisons shall go down to the ground. And they shall make a spoil of thy riches and make a prey of thy merchandise. And they shall break down thy walls and destroy thy pleasant houses. And they shall lay thy stones and thy timber and thy dust in the midst of the water. And I'll cause the noise of thy songs to cease, and the sound of thy harps shall no more be heard. And I will make thee like the top of a rock. Thou shalt be a place to spread nets upon. Thou shalt build no more, for I, Yahweh, have spoken it, saith Yahweh God. Thus saith Yahweh God to Tyrus, shall not the isles shake at the sound of thy fall when the wounded cry? When the slaughter is made in the midst of thee, then all the princes of the sea shall come down from their thrones and lay away their robes and put off their broidered garments. They shall clothe themselves with trembling. they shall sit upon the ground and shall tremble every moment and be astonished at thee. And they shall take up a lamentation for thee and say to thee, how art thou destroyed that was inhabited of seafaring men, the renowned city which was strong in the sea, she and her inhabitants, which caused their terror to be on all that haunt it. Now shall the isles tremble in the day of thy fall, yea. The isles that are in the sea shall be troubled at thy departure. For thus saith Yahweh God, when I shall make thee a desolate city, like the cities that are not inhabited, when I shall bring up the deep upon thee, and great waters shall cover thee, when I shall bring thee down with thee that descend into the pit, with the people of old time, and shall set thee in the low parts of the earth, and places of desolate of old, and then them that go down to the pit, that thou be not inhabited, and I shall set glory in the land of the living. I will make thee a terror, and thou shalt be no more. Though thou be sought for, yet shalt thou never be found again, saith Yahweh God.
Well, Tyre was never found again, that's for sure. But this, back when I was first studying Christian identity, and I knew that there was no way that the Tyrians could possibly be Canaanites. Ezekiel chapters 26, 27, 28 weren't the only chapters that convinced me that the Tyrians must have been Israelites, but they were the primary chapters. They were the most significant chapters that convinced me that there was no way that these people could have been Israelites, to be lamented in this manner and punished in this manner as they are in Ezekiel. In Ezekiel chapters 26, 27, and 28. Then if you go back to the Judges period, you learn that this had to be, Tyre had to be an Israelite city. It had to be, without a doubt, and that's evident from the beginning of the book of Judges in the Song of Deborah. So all these Jewish Bible maps, they separate the coast of Canaan and they assign it to Phoenicians, and the Jews claim the Phoenicians are Canaanites, but the truth is that the Israelites really did inhabit the coast of Canaan. And that these people known as Phoenicians to the Greeks must have been Israelites. And that's evident from beginning in Judges 5:17, where it says, Gilead abode beyond Jordan, and why did Dan remain in ships? And Asher continued on a seashore and abode in his breaches. And that word for breaches is a word that means inlets or harbors. It should have been translated harbors, not breaches. And that's when you start to learn that the northern tribes of Israel were inhabiting the cities of Tyre and not Canaanites.
Yeah, well, I think the reason the Jews do that is because there's a connection between Europeans and Phoenicians. So they want to break the connection, the strongest historical connection. I think it's even stronger than, connecting other tribes to the Israelites. But you can connect Europeans directly through the Phoenicians to the Israelites. Yeah. And I think that's why they do that. They make this historical fiction.
They have to do that. They have to create historical fictions around the Phoenicians. They have to. You're right, because they have no choice, because once the Phoenician connection is realized, and once it's realized that Phoenicians are Israelites, that then their whole cover is blown. Everything's blown.
Yeah, it's definitely the best CI connection I can think of. We've got a few, but that's the best one, and that's one that people don't harp on enough.
Well, you know, I wrote my paper on the Phoenicians. That was the first historical essay I wrote, because Clifton Emmaheiser was fooled by the Jewish propaganda that the Phoenicians were Canaanites. And that's why I wrote it. arguing with, that's how Cliff and I met when I sent him that paper. That's how we met. That's how our relationship started.
Well, it took a few months too, didn't it, for him to get back to you at first?
Yeah, it took a few months because the first time I sent it to him, he ignored it. So I sent it to him again 6 months later, and then he got it. I rewrote it and sent it to him again. I sent him a 20-page handwritten letter on the Phoenicians and how they must have been Israel, and he didn't get it. So I sent him a 30-page one 6 months later, 8 months later. I don't remember exactly how long, but then he got it.
Nice.
So that's a beautiful thing.
That's how Cliff and I met, comes from the
Hebrew word sore, right?
I'm sorry, Martin.
So tire comes from the Hebrew word sore?
T-S-O-R, yes. We would spell it in English, T-S-O-R, it's sore.
Which is where the word sore comes from?
No, Martin, no, not at all.
Okay. And it's, I guess it means a rock?
A sore is a rock or a high rocky crag or a mountainous hill, a rocky hill. So two Greek words come from sore, T-S-O-R. And even George Rawlinson notes this in his translation of Herodotus, where Tyre is discussed by Herodotus, the ancient Greek historian. And Rawlinson noted, and this is where I learned it from, right? This was part of my own learning experience. Rawlinson noted that both the Greek words, both taurus and sorus, were from this word sore, T-S-O-R, that the Greeks used sorus, S-U-R-O-S, to describe the land that became Syria in Latin, and taurus, T-U-R-O-S, to describe the city. So early classicists translated T-U-R-O-S in Greek into T-Y-R-E in English, which if you understand how that works, you would understand that. It, even though it's kind of stupid, you would understand why it is. But Tyre, Taurus became Tyre and Sorus became Syria. But both of those words come from T-S-O-R, the Hebrew word for the city of Tsor. So it's Tyre or Tyrus here. And Tyrus is actually directly from the Greek word Taurus. T-U-R-O-S.
Well, don't the discrepancies sometimes come through just verbalization or scribal activity over a length of period or time?
Well, yeah, you know, it's verbalization. It's also a recognition that the O-S ending on words is a Greek, is a facet of Greek grammar so that they could decline the words. And then it's really just T-O-R or T-S-O-R in Hebrew.
Well, there's also like suffix and prefix, but also isn't some of it just from simply reading from left to right versus right to left? In translation, not necessarily in this example.
Yeah, that happens, but not in this instance.
Right. Sorry, I don't mean to carry on, but
the ancient Phoenicians actually wrote in a manner that's called boustrephedon. Boustrephedon means as the cow turns or as the ox turns. Like you plow a field, you're going from left to right, then you're going from right to left, right?
It makes perfect sense.
So they would write a line of text left to right, and the next line would be right to left, and the next line would be left to right, and the next line, and that's called boustrephedon. From the Greek word strophe, which is a turn, and bous, which is a steer or an ox.
Well, it's very organic, dare I say, to venture towards a joke.
Yeah.
You know, even today's vernacular.
Well, that's not a facet here in this instance, but that does account for things like how the Phoenician goddess Anath became Athena. The consonants got switched, right? That's how that happened.
Right. I remember that example, yeah. Sorry, I don't mean to distract.
So, yeah, I mean, Ezekiel, if you really pay attention to what's being said here in these several chapters that are coming up about Tyre, you'll realize that they had to be Israelites. That this lamentation for the prince of Tyre and the king of Tyre, that's really just that's a Hebrew parallelism. They're both being made for the same individual or the same office, let's put it that way. And that these people had to be Israelites to be lamented in this way and punished in this way.
Well, right. Isn't that not in contrast or associated with chapter 30, verse 5, with the Ethiopia, Libya, and Lydia being mingled, right?
I don't know really what you mean there, though.
It's not, I don't know if that's a fair reference, I'm sorry. Or not reference, correlation or whatever. Never mind, I'm sorry.
No, I don't think I don't think that's true because the rulers of Ethiopia and Libya and Lydia were not lamented.
Okay.
Tyre is an Israelite city, but yeah, you know, we tend to oversimplify things in our understanding. If you really study the divided kingdom, Israel and Judah, they weren't the only divisions. There were more divisions than that. And Tyre was one of the divisions, where Tyre basically became independent of Samaria. And Lachish became independent of Jerusalem. There was more than just two divisions. There were other regions that were splintered that came out from the control or wouldn't recognize the sovereignty of the kings in Jerusalem or Samaria in the time of the divided kingdom. And Tyre became virtually independent of Samaria in the time of the divided kingdom. That's a study I'm onto, but I don't know if I'll ever get a time to do it.
Well, I hope
but it's do. Clear in scripture and it's clear in scripture and inscriptions.
I don't mean to jump ahead. I think I meant that weren't Ethiopia, Libya, and Lydia mingled by this time in Ezekiel? Or did I say that already?
Well,
no, never mind.
In Ezekiel chapter 30, Lydia is an unfortunate translation. And that's because there are people called Lud who are from Sham. But there are also a people called Ludim who descended from Mizraim. And they're not distinguished in Ezekiel chapter 30. They should have been. Because the Ludim descended from Mizraim are not the Lud of Shem. They're just not. So in Ezekiel chapter 30, Lydia is an unfortunate translation. It really is. Because Ethiopia and Libya are in Africa, and Lydia is in Anatolia, and those people are Shemites, and they're totally different from the Hamites of Africa. Mizraim begot Ludin. That's Genesis chapter 10, verse 13. But Lud, the son of Shem, is Genesis chapter 10, verse 22. I mean, I'll discuss that when we get to Ezekiel 30, please.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. No, I'm so sorry. I don't mean to keep preventing
this. Yeah, it's no worries.
I'm trying to make a note of this because I couldn't help but read up a note is why I mentioned it, but it was a very vague note. I thought it might have something with what we were talking about. So.
Well, I'll just tell you one thing. All of those Bible notes that you find in published Bibles, they all suck, okay? Every one of them.
No, it was my note that I made while I was reading it.
Okay. I'm sorry. Maybe your note.
But it was very, very vague. It's literally just like hinting, like it was a question mark. Ethiopia,
yeah, well,
Libya.
Well, there were two people. There were people called Ludim. Ludim is the plural for Lud, right? So there's people called Lud that descended from Shem, and people called Lud that descended from Mizraim, who descended from Ham in Genesis chapter 10. So it's basically the same name, and it's confused. Unfortunately, it's confused in later scriptures, because the translators failed to distinguish between the two Luds. And the Lydians of Anatolia were Shemites, and the Lydians of Africa, wherever the fuck they were, because they really didn't leave their name to us in any memorable historical way, they were descended from Mizraim, so they were really related to Egyptians.
I'm trying to decide how I this into a note. I had it as a note originally because it was a question. It didn't make it was enough for me to look further into because I didn't understand it. That's why I brought it up. But thank you. I'm trying to put this all down.
I'll read chapter 27. You got time for 27, Bill?
Oh, we definitely have time. I'm just looking at 26 to see if there's anything else we may have discussed. But I guess in 27, we'll see everything we need to about Tyre when the Prince of Tyre is lamented.
The word of Yahweh came again unto me, saying, now thou, son of man, take up a lamentation for Tyrus, and say unto Tyrus, O thou that art situate at the entry of the sea, which art a merchant of the people for many isles, thus saith Yahweh God, O Tyrus, thou hast said, I am of perfect beauty. Thy borders are in the midst of the sea, thy builders have perfected thy beauty. They have made all thy shipboards of fir trees and senna. They have taken cedars from Lebanon to make masts for thee. Of the oaks of Bashan have they made thine oars. The company of the Asherites have made thy benches of ivory, brought out of the isles of Chittim. Fine linen with broidered work from Egypt was that which thou spreadest forth to be thy sail. Blue and purple from the eyes of Elisha was that which covered thee. The inhabitants of Zidon, Arvad, were thy mariners, thy wise men, O Tyrus, that were in thee, were thy pilots. The ancients of Gebal and the wise men thereof were in thee, thy caulkers. All the ships of the sea with their mariners were in thee to occupy thy merchandise. They of Persia and of Lud and of Put were in thine army, thy men of war. They hanged their shield and helmet in thee. They set forth thy comeliness. The men of Arvad with thine army were upon thy walls round about, and the Gemadims were in thy towers. They hanged their shields upon the walls round about. They have made thy beauty perfect. Tarshish was thy merchant by reason of the multitude of all kinds of riches, with silver, iron, tin, and lead. They traded in thy fairs, Javan, Tubal, and Meshech. They were thy merchants. They traded the persons of men and vessels of brass in thy market. They of the house of Togarma traded in thy fairs with horses and horsemen and mules. The men of Dedan were thy merchants. Many isles were the merchandise of thine hand. They brought thee for a present horns of ivory and ebony. Syria was thy merchant by reason of multitude of wares of thy making. They occupied in thy fairs with emeralds, purple, embroidered work, and fine linen, and coral, and agate. Judah and the land of Israel, they were thy merchants. They traded in thy market wheat of Minnith, and Peneg, and honey, and oil, and balm.
Yeah, that's a good enough place to stop. I mean, it goes on, but it's basically showing that the hub of international trade that Tyre had become in the ancient world. And Herodotus had explained that Tarshish was actually a trading town even before the time of the Trojan War, which correlates with scripture and the stories about Solomon sending his ships to Tarshish with Hiram, and how the Phoenicians were trading with Tarshish and that's in the 10th century BC. Well, Herodotus is saying that Tarshish was a trading town in the 12th and 13th centuries BC. That Tarshish was known for its trade and Tarshish was on the Mediterranean coast of what we know today as Spain. The scope of the trade which Tyre had conducted is absolutely evident here, that it's like all across the Mediterranean, all across the lands of the Genesis 10 nations, from the Black Sea to the Danube River and down through the Mediterranean, all along the coast, all the way to Spain. So, I mean, the ancient Israelites didn't live in a bubble. These Tyrians were Israelites, and they were conducting this trade. The ancients of Gabal is identified with Byblos, which is a famous Phoenician city from the 14th century on the coast of Syria. Persia and Lud and Fut. And that Lud it's ambiguous as to which Lud is meant there, Eric. The Lud that's a descendant of Mizraim and an Egyptian, or the Lud which is in Lydia, which is a descendant of Shem. It's ambiguous there. But Fut is usually identified with Northern Africa. And Fut is also a son of Mizraim. But Persia, and here in Hebrew, the name is Persia. It's not Elam. Usually where we see Persia in scripture, the name is Elam, and Elam is the son of Shem. But here it's Paras, which is Persia.
User disconnected from your channel.
So that's kind of, it almost seems out of place there with Lud and Fut. But this is talking about the wide-ranging trade of the Tyrians. In verse 7, Elisha, that there is an ancient inscription or two that kind of identify Elisha with the island of Cyprus, with a portion of the island of Cyprus. And I don't know if I could invest in that or not. I would have to study it more. But being the Isles of Elisha, it seems to make sense. Now, the Kittim definitely dwelled on Cyprus, where it says the Isles of the Kittim. The Kittim definitely dwelt on Cyprus, and the authors of the Dead Sea Scrolls considered the Romans the empire of the Kittim because they just associated them all with Japhethites, even though they were wrong in their identification. That word gamadim, it is, doesn't belong to a tribe. It should have been translated as warriors. Arvad is a city in Sudan. In verse 11. Javan, in verse 13, they are the Ionian Greeks. The Persians, in their own inscriptions, call the Ionian Greeks Yavanna. And that's the Hebrew word here is Yavan. And that's the Ionian Greeks without any dispute. That should refer to the Ionian Greeks. It occurs very often elsewhere in Scripture, in the prophets. And it always refers to, it's always in the context which fits the Ionian Greeks, who were Japhethites and not Israelites. And of course, the Ionians were the dominant tribe in what we know as Greece in all throughout ancient times. They were the tribe at Athens, primarily, and dominated Greece, even though it wasn't called Greece back then. Tubal and Meshech were originally located on the Black Sea, north of Israel and Syria. Togarma, they're Japhethites. Dedan, they're Hamites, Cushites. I don't know if I have really anything else to say about this.
We're at verse 2 where it says, now thou son of man, and it's got H120 there. You know, could that refer to a Canaanite? It couldn't refer to a Canaanite, could it? Verse 2.
It's referring to
Ezekiel, the prophet. Yeah, it's referring to the prophet, sorry.
Yeah, it's referring to Ezekiel.
I don't know how I misread that somehow.
It happens.
I'll read verse 18 then. Has anyone else got anything, Eric?
Question. Oh, I'm listening.
I'll go to verse 18 then. Oops. Damascus was thy merchant in the multitude of
wares.
Are
you that far along? I didn't think you even reached 17.
Did I read Judah and the land of Israel? They were thy merchants. They traded in thy market wheat of Minnith and Penag and honey and oil and balm. Damascus.
I'm sorry. I didn't think you read that far.
It's all right. Damascus was thy merchant in the multitude of the wares of thy making, for the multitude of all riches in the wine of Helbon and white wool. Dan also and Javan, going to and fro, occupied in thy fairs. Bright iron, cassia, and calamus were in thy market. Dedan was thy merchant in the precious clothes of for chariots, Arabia, and all the princes of Kedar. They occupied with thee in lambs and rams and goats, and these were thy merchants. The merchants of Sheba and Remah, they were thy merchants. They occupied in thy fairs and chief of all spices and with all precious stones and gold. Haran and Kenna and Eden, the merchants of Sheba, Asher and Kilmad were thy merchants. These were thy merchants in all sorts of things, in blue clothes, embroidered work, in chests of rich apparel, bound with cords and made of cedar, among thy merchandise. The ships of Tarshish did sing of thee in thy market, and thou was replenished and made very glorious in the midst of the seas. Thy rowers have brought thee into great waters. The east wind hath brought thee in the midst of the seas. Thy riches and thy fares, thy merchandise, thy mariners and thy pilots, thy caulkers and the occupiers of thy merchandise and all thy men of war are in thee, that are in thee, and in all thy company which is in the midst of thee shall fall into the midst of the seas in the day of thy ruin. The suburbs shall shake at the sound of the city of thy pilots, and all that handle the oar, the mariners, and all the pilots of the sea shall come from their ships. They shall stand upon the land, and shall cause their voice to be heard against thee, and shall cry bitterly, and shall cast up dust upon their heads. They shall wallow themselves in the ashes. And they shall make themselves utterly bold for thee, and gird them with sackcloth, and they shall weep for thee with bitterness of heart and bitter wailing. And in their wailing they shall take up lamentation for thee, and lament over thee, saying, what city is like Tyrus, like the destroyed in the midst of the sea? When thy wares went forth out of the seas, thou filledest many people. Thou didst enrich the kings of the earth with the multitude of thy riches and thy merchandise. In the time when thou shalt be broken by the seas and the depths of the waters, thy merchandise and all thy company in the midst of thee shall fall. All the inhabitants of the isles shall be astonished at thee, and their kings shall be sore afraid. They shall be troubled in their countenance. The merchants among the people shall hiss at thee. They shall be a terror, and never shall be any more.
There's a lot of controversy circling around verse 20. Oh, I'm sorry, verse 19, where they Dan, where they, a lot of translations actually want to read they Dan instead of Dan, and there is no tribe they Dan. And the same phrase can be interpreted as Hebrew as saying even Dan, and it's Dan, it's not they Dan. And the NAS, and I really believe that that's Jewish academic pressure also. This Ezekiel chapter 27, verse 19 is clearly saying, Dan also and Javan going to and fro occupied in thy fairs. And the fact is that the Danan Greeks are the tribe of Dan, and the Ionian Greeks are the tribe of Javan, and they're trading with Tyre from Greece.
Wow.
That's the truth of that matter. But they actually try to corrupt where it should say even Dan or and Dan going and also Javan going to and fro occupied in affairs in verse 19. It's not they Dan. That's totally dishonest. It's and Dan or even Dan. It's not they Dan. As the New American Standard Bible has it.
And a few others have it too.
The Septuagint's totally screwed up in that verse. It's totally weird.
It says, out of Azel came wrought iron.
Yeah, it makes no sense at all. And where the fuck is Azel? There is no Azel.
Yeah, so it's just like what they did to the Phoenicians. So now they're trying to hide the Greeks.
Yeah,
you know, to definitely avoid connecting them to white people and white civilization. We don't want the Greeks connected in there. And it's Dan and Javan, two Greek tribes going to and fro, trading calamus in their markets. That's CI.
And you know what? In the Vulgate, in the Latin Vulgate, it's Dan et Grecia, which is Dan in Greece, because Javan was taken for granted as being equivalent to Greece, right? Even though it was only one tribe of the Greeks. Dan et Grecia in the Vulgate. So the Vulgate just exposes what they're trying to corrupt, how they're trying to corrupt the verse. I haven't seen the Dead Sea Scrolls. I mean, maybe I should check. I look real quick to see if that verse even exists in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It might take me a second. There's not much Ezekiel in Dead Sea Scrolls, though, I'm afraid to say. Nope, sorry. Skips from 24 to 35, and there's only a couple of verses in 24 and a few more in 35.
It seems so many times the Dead Sea Scrolls lets us down. Like, out the important verses we need it to have, and it doesn't.
That's absolutely true. It is so many times I've tried to look to the Dead Sea Scrolls to settle a dispute between the Septuagint and the Masoretic text, and those verses is somehow missing. I wonder why.
Yeah, I can't help but maybe it's on purpose. Someone snipped it out.
Well, you know what? To me, the Vulgate tells on the Jews. First, Vaydan makes no sense at all when you look at the Hebrew. It's a vav followed by the daleth and the nun. It, the vav is a hook. It means and even also in front of a word. It's and Dan. There's no tribe named Vaydan, V-E-D-A-N. That's just a cope in the New American Standard Bible and some other translations. That's just bullshit. That's a cope. It's definitely and or even Dan and Javan. Dan also and Javan going to and fro occupied by theirs. That's what the Hebrew says. It's unmistakable.
And They can pervert it
any way they want, but they don't want to admit that it's the tribe of Dan that are the Danan Greeks who are trading with Tyre along with the Ionian Greeks.
Yeah, so it's just a bunch of white people. You've got these white Phoenicians trading with these white Greeks.
From your channel.
Yeah, right.
It's all white. White civilization. The BDB has... part of their definition may simply be read even Dan. That's in the BDB. So why didn't they just put even Dan? Because that's what, I mean, BDB is pretty good. It's pretty credible.
It's pretty credible. It has some shortcomings, but there's its high points too. I'll be talking about the BDB probably in Friday's podcast. In a lot of ways, I like Jesenius better though. But you really do need both, for real.
User disconnected from your channel.
But it should say even Dan or and Dan. Either way, the vav can be translated either way. It can be also Dan, but then it's also Dan, also and Javan. I don't know why it should say also Dan, also and Javan. Dan also. Okay. The Masoret, the King James translators took a word, a construction that means and Dan and translated it to Dan also. It says and Dan and Javan, and they translated it as Dan also and Javan. You see what I mean? Probably for poetic reasons or to try to make it easier to read or whatever.
Yeah, because in English it's weird to have and.
Yeah. So it'd be cool to just say also Dan and Javan or even Dan and Javan, one or the other.
Yeah, I'd probably go even Dan.
So that's why they're trying to say it should mean even Dan, because it's and Dan and Javan, but it could be even Dan and Javan, what would rectify that repetition. But there's no they Dan. That's just fucking ridiculous, and that's a Jewish cope, as far as I'm concerned. That they're trying to distract from the fact that this is the Hebrew tribe of Dan, the Danan Greeks, along with the Ionian Greeks, trading with the Tyrians.
Yeah, a made-up tribe to cover up their...
Exactly, because there's no tribe of Vaydan.
Our enemy is pathetic.
Yes.
Well, they leave the trail for any of us that study and are diligent, right?
Well, I wish all Christians were like that. Because if they actually started this verse, just word by word, that just, it'd click. Things like that, I mean, things like that would click for them.
But well, instead, well, actually, like I mean, 25 fucking years ago, these chapters were one of the things that clicked for me. These chapters of Ezekiel. So when Clifton Emmaheiser said that in one of his newsletters that the Phoenicians were Canaanites, I knew better because I had already studied these chapters of Ezekiel. And that's how we met.
That's a beautiful thing, a blessing, you know. That's why we need to depend on each other under him as our guidance. As a fellowship, I mean, sorry.
I love Clifton. He did really good in a lot of areas, but he was dropping the ball on this one. That's how we met. That's how we met.
Well, he sure came a long way, though, didn't he? Not, oh, you too. I mean, all of us, right? Don't get me wrong, but I mean, he sure, just the scope at when he really, really became dedicated was.
No, Clifton helped me a lot too. He did, but we helped each other. That was.
Right.
How our friendship was predicated, right?
Yeah. Sorry, I don't mean to take us off of where we're at right now, but is there, I'm not calling it a typo, but what I'm seeing, and I had a note for chapter 28, 2 and 9, where.
We're not up to 28 yet.
well, we just left off at the end of 27, right?
Yeah, okay. 28 might be next week. I don't know. Are we going to do 28 tonight, Bill?
I don't see why not. It's only 9:30.
You want me to read it first, and Eric, and then?
Well, for the heck of it, I mean, how often am I here?
Is there anything that we need to discuss in 27? I mean, to me, it's an important chapter, but maybe there's not much more we could discuss. Okay.
Well, I would hate to break anything off if it's
no, I'll let it go. I'll let it go. I mean, it is what it is. But we know that the Phoenicians are Israelites, and this is the Prince of Tyre being, or the King of Tyre being lamented here. And I really do believe Tyre being lamented and the King of Tyre being lamented, that where the Prince of Tyre is lamented, that's only a Hebraism. It's only a Hebrew parallelism for the King of Tyre. It's not a separate person. So with that, we can proceed with chapter 28.
Ezekiel 28.
Well, I mean, for how often I'm here, I can read it if you want. I mean, on Wednesdays.
If you want to read 28, go ahead. Go ahead, brother.
Is there any place I should stop, or should I just read the whole chapter?
Halfway.
Yeah, we generally try and do like 12 to 15 verses, I think, usually.
Yeah, 10 to 15, depending on the length of the chapter, I mean. Halfway is cool.
Is it inappropriate to the question before I read? Well, I'll just wait.
Yeah, definitely wait.
Give us like 13 to 15 verses.
Sure. The word of Yahweh came again unto me, saying, Son of man, say unto the prince of Tyrus, Thus saith Yahweh God, because thine heart is lifted up, and thou hast said, I am a god, I sit in the seat of God, in the midst of the seas, yet thou art a man, and not God. Though thou set thine heart as the heart of God. Behold, thou art wiser than Daniel, there is no secret that they can hide from thee. With thy wisdom and with thine understanding, thou hast gotten thee riches and has gotten gold and silver into thy treasures. By thy great wisdom and by thy traffic hast thou increased thy riches, and thine heart is lifted up because of thy riches. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh God, because thou hast set thine heart as the heart of God. Behold, therefore I will bring strangers upon thee, the terrible of the nations, and they shall draw their swords against the beauty of thy wisdom, and they shall defile thy brightness. They shall bring thee down to the pit, and thou shalt die the deaths of them that are slain in the midst of the seas. Wilt thou yet say before him that slay thee, I am God? But thou shalt be a man and no God in the hand of him that slayeth thee. Thou shalt die the deaths of the uncircumcised by the hand of strangers. For I have spoken it, saith Yahweh God. Moreover, the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyrus, and say unto him, Thus saith Yahweh God, thou sealest up the sum full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of Yahweh. Every precious stone was thy covering, the sardius, topaz, and the diamond, the beryl, the onyx, and the jasper, the sapphire, the emerald, and the carbuncle, and gold. The workmanship of thy tabrets and of thy pipes was prepared in thee in the day that thou wast created.
There's some serious shit going on here in this chapter.
Should I do a few more?
No, that's fine. The Prince of Tyre, who's one and the same as the King of Tyre, I don't believe it's two separate people. I think it's a Hebrew parallelism. It's addressing the same individual, these two lamentations, these several lamentations. That thou art wiser than Daniel. There is no secret that they could hide from thee. It is a pretty amazing coming from a prophet of Yahweh to another man who's being condemned. That's really a pretty profound and amazing statement, in my opinion. And I really do believe that the Daniel mentioned in Ezekiel is Daniel the prophet, who's in Babylon, as this is being written. Daniel the prophet, who was also known for his great wisdom, right? So the Prince of Tyre is being told he's wiser than Daniel, but he's still a fuck up. Basically, he's still a screw up. He's being lamented here at the same time he's being condemned.
Is that sort of a sarcastic comment, Bill? Like, behold, thou art wiser than Daniel. There's no secret they can hide from thee. Like, is that sort of like sarcastic, I guess?
You know what? I don't think it's sarcastic. I think it's like all the wisdom in the world isn't going to do you any good if you're conceited and full of yourself. You know what? If you're not humble.
Well, it serves as an absolute excellent example, right? But also, I don't know. This is one of the reasons why I chose this chapter as a note. Is in 28:2 and in 28:9. I don't know if it's something lost in translation, but I agree as far as it's almost sarcastic, right? Like old Hebrew sarcasm. But when he says, he's almost like chastising him, where he says, I am a God, but it's capitalized. I sit in the seat of God, but it's capitalized.
Well, the capitalization is only in English, right?
That's what I mean, though. But that's where it was like, there's like some, not a juxtaposition, but there's this weird, it should be lowercase if it's God talking to him.
Well,
right?
It should be lowercase. I would have made it lowercase if I was a translator, but I wasn't a translator. I wasn't alive that early.
Are you sure, Bill?
Yeah, that's a little before my time. I would have made it lowercase. Thus saith the Lord God, capital. Because thine heart is lifted up and thou hast said, I am a God, small g. I sit in the seat of God, small g. in the midst of the sea, yet thou art man and not God, capital G.
That's what I mean. And then again in 9. See, that's why, like Joe said, I thought the exact same thing. Like, it seems sarcastic, but to me, there was something.
It's a matter of interpretation, Eric. Men who were powerful and wealthy began to think of themselves as God. It's replete throughout history.
No, I get that completely. I don't mean to make it more than it is, and I don't mean to waste our time, but I just thought it was very funny because it should have been very obvious, right? And that's why it kind of stuck with me. It's like, why, you know, is there something I'm, and this is only going off of the KJV, and I could admit my depth of ignorance on all of it. I have not looked into lexicons and all that on this chapter, which I should have when I made the note, but I only have the note. I never went on further, but that's why it was just very strange, you know, like how could this not have been obvious to the translators at the time? You know, this is like almost like a blatant typo to me.
Well, yeah, you know what? I mean, they were just men too, and they weren't perfect, and I can make mistakes and you can make mistakes. But the bottom line is that in ancient Hebrew and ancient Greek, there are no capital letters because every letter is capital. So they're all equal. In Koine Greek, in all of the ancient manuscripts, every letter is capital. That is an aspect of the great uncial manuscripts. Every letter is capital. There are no upper and lower case. Every letter is capital, so they're all equal. It's the same thing in Hebrew. There's only one case in Hebrew letters in the Hebrew alphabet, and every letter is capital, so they're all equal. So when you're translating this into English, where we have capital letters and small letters, you have to make decisions, and they didn't always make the correct decision, right?
Right. Well, I guess part of it too is because the latter four versions are between Strong's 410 and 430, and then in the beginning it's H3069. So I think that's partly why I made the note, because it's like, what the heck is going on here? Like,
410 and 430, it is 410 is El, and 430 is Elohim, and Elohim is technically plural, but the plural is used as the plural of majesty to refer to the singular God, right?
Yep.
So at the beginning of verse 2, well, towards the beginning, thus saith the Lord God, and there, where God is in all capital letters, that's really Yahweh. And it should have said the Lord Yahweh, but they wouldn't use the name Yahweh, so they said the Lord God and made God in three capital letters, in all caps. But right. That should really say Adonai. Adonai is a term for Lord or Master in Greek, Adonai, and that's translated Lord. But it's not Yahweh, and that's why it's not in all caps. It's only a capital L and a small ORD, right? So
right.
It says Adonai Yehovah, or Adonai Yahweh is what it says. So that's the Lord Yahweh is what it should say. That's how I would translate it, the Lord Yahweh, or the Master Yahweh. So I would probably say Lord. Because thine heart is lifted up, and now it said, I am a God, El, not Elohim, but El, which is a small g God. It's singular of a God or a judge. I sit in the seat of God, Elohim. So there we should have a capital G, because the Prince of Tyre is thinking that he sits in the seat of Yahweh.
Yep. Exactly.
In the midst of the seas, yet thou art a man and not God. And that should say not a God, small g, because it's El and not Elohim.
Right. No, exactly. No, it's funny. That's why I made the note, because it just seemed like such a typo. And that's why I compared it to verse 9, because it's somewhat similar. You know what I mean?
That's the King James Version, and the translators didn't nail it every time. They just didn't.
Oh, I get it. I hope I'm not taking away from what we're talking about. I was going to make a quip, too. If Clifton was reading this, would he say, thus saith Yahweh Elohim? Because exactly what we're talking about, right? Because he preferred that.
Yeah, I love Clifton, but he drove me nuts with that.
I know.
He was trying to address some CI heretics doing that, right? He really was trying to address some CI heretics and belittle them and basically mock them. Yahweh Elohim, he had this construction that he created, Yahweh singular Elohim, because there were CI heretics that tried to say that because Elohim was plural, that we had more than one God. And I don't know, people get off on so many damn tangents that are half learned or unlearned and come across a Hebrew word and run with it when they shouldn't. So Clifton was always writing Yahweh singular Elohim in his papers to try to show that Elohim was a plural of majesty for God, for Yahweh. And Clifton meant well, but it does become a distraction sometimes.
Right.
Once you piss off Clifton, he just keeps hitting you and hitting you and hitting you, and he never stops.
And he don't stop, right. You're exactly right, Joe.
He's so right, dedicated. You can tell that. Even with limited space, he would not cut out singular Elohim. He would not shorten it for the sake of it, right? He was dedicated. I respect that to an extent.
Well, I used to sit in prison, proof me that shit, and just shake my head and let it go.
Well, so I'm sorry. That's why I brought it up. To me, it just seemed like reading through it, I didn't see something to me as such a glaring typo, in my opinion, from the KJV. I'm not saying they're not without plenty of errors, but that just seemed very...
They could have done better to distinguish between El and Elohim, and that would have helped clarify what was being spoken. I agree.
Well, you mean just from coming from God's perspective, Yahweh's perspective, like how did they keep that capitalized? I don't know. That was just so glaring. I didn't mean to take us off track. Should I read on the rest of the chapter?
You know what? They probably had a fear of writing God with a small g.
Oh, I get that. In those two or three cases that we just discussed, those ones to me just seemed so obvious. Like, I don't know why they capitalized it. Because it's literally talking about them, uplifting themselves to that status, which should have been even the previous words, like a God, not the God, or just God alone, Yahweh, you know. But it's also the word we discussed. So, El and Elohim, like I said. Sorry, I don't mean to revisit what we just talked about.
I don't know if you find God singular in the singular where it's not capitalized. I mean, you might somewhere.
Okay, so maybe it is. Yeah, that's why.
You might somewhere where it definitely refers to a pagan idol, but it's probably rare, I'm guessing. I'm guessing it's rare.
Well, should I continue off of verse 13, I think I left off of?
Why not?
Okay, I'll probably just stop at the end of the chapter then. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. Thou wast upon the holy mountain of Yahweh. Thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created, till iniquity was founded in thee. By the multitude of thy merchandise, they have filled the midst of thee with violence, and thou hast sinned. Therefore, I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of God, and I will destroy thee, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. Thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness. I will cast thee to the ground. I will lay thee before kings, that they may behold thee. Thou hast defiled thy sanctuaries by the multitude of thine iniquities, by the iniquity of thy traffic. Therefore will I bring forth a fire from the midst of thee. It shall devour thee, and I will bring thee to ashes upon the earth in the sight of all them that behold thee. All they that know thee among the people shall be astonished at thee. Thou shalt be a terror, and never shalt thou be any more. I'll read the last few. Again, the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Zidon, and prophesy against it, and say, Thus saith Yahweh God, Behold, I am against thee, O Zidon, and I will be glorified in the midst of thee, and they shall know that I am Yahweh, when I shall have executed judgments in her, and shall be sanctified in her. For I will send into her pestilence and blood into her streets, and the wounded shall be judged in the midst of her by the sword upon her on every side, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. And there shall be more pricking briar unto the house of Israel, nor any grieving thorn of all that are around about them that despise them, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh God, when I shall have gathered the house of Israel from the people among whom they are scattered, and shall be sanctified in them in the sight of the heathen, then shall they dwell in their land that I have given to my servant Jacob, and they shall dwell safely therein, and shall build houses and plant vineyards. Yea, they shall dwell with confidence when I have executed judgments upon all those that despise them round about them, and they shall know that I am Yahweh their God.
End of Ezekiel chapter 28. In verse 13, first let me say that in I hope I remember this next week when it's fitting to talk about. As we began Ezekiel chapter 26 tonight, and it came to pass in the 11th year, meaning the 11th year of Ezekiel's captivity, in the first day of the month, that the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, and now as we're about to begin Ezekiel chapter 29 in our next session here, in the 10th year, in the 10th month, it's the first indication of some of the chapters of Ezekiel being out of order chronologically. That being said, let's wind back to verse 13 here. Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. And I don't know how many old-time, old-school CI preachers have said that this proves that the king of Tyre was Satan. Because he was
what, sorry?
Was Satan.
Oh.
Because he was in Eden, the garden of God, but that's simply not true, because Eden is simply an allegory throughout Ezekiel to describe the Adamic oikoumene, and that becomes evident in Ezekiel chapters 31 and 36.
So what would it mean by that statement then, that it's he, that he's
Eden is only an allegory for the general wider Adamic world at the time, and Ezekiel chapter 31 demonstrates that. Where it's described that the Assyrian had become greater than all the trees of Eden.
Right. Well, I hope I didn't push us a little chapter too far. Maybe I'd be willing to review it next week, 28, to go over again. I kind of blasted through it at the end, I guess.
No, that's fine. That's
No, that's fine. There's only so much that we could discuss in this sort of format, but.
Well, no, like you're saying, because there's so much, not your words, but not necessarily overlap, but the timing is just kind of seems mixed up. I mean, it was
yeah,
still...
the chronology is off that the next chapter actually should precede chapter 26. But this is where we had the King of Tyre being lamented here. Son of Man, take up a lamentation upon the King of Tyre, and or Tyrus, as it says in the King James. And we had already lamented the Prince of Tyre. They're one and the same. That is only a Hebraism. That is only a Hebrew parallelism. That's all it is.
Yep.
Is verse 18 referring to Tyre, where it says, "Thou hast defiled thy sanctuaries"?
Verse 18?
Yeah. Because if they've got sanctuaries, wouldn't that indicate, wouldn't a sanctuary refer to like a temple of Yahweh, so, or some sort of worship of Yahweh? Like, why would they be convicted of thou hast defiled thy sanctuaries if they were like heathens, non-Israelites?
Well, yeah, right. If they weren't Israelites, they wouldn't have any holy places or sanctuaries.
Like
they're
definitely
Israelites. Without a doubt.
Yeah, it makes it sound like they're worshippers of Yahweh, because thou hast defiled thy sanctuaries by the multitude of thine iniquities. Like if you said that to the Philistines, it wouldn't make any sense because they're worshipping pagan idols. I'm thinking.
I agree.
Well, because even if it was like a carry-on of some sort of sarcasm, he wouldn't actually be chastising them for their fake sanctuaries, because it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be a sanctuary if it wasn't to him. By definition, or just the language, the word used, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking.
Right.
I have one more thing I wanted to ask, which is, why are the Sidonians a prickling briar unto the house of Israel? Like at verse 24, it says, I will send, like he's talking about destroying Zidon. And then 24, the conclusion, and there shall be no more a prickling briar unto the house of Israel, nor any grieving thorn. Does that mean that Zidon was some sort of Canaanite nation?
They were dominated. Zidon was dominated with Canaanites. And Solomon had enslaved them early on, the Sidonians. There were some Israelites at one time or another dwelling in Sidon. But this Solomon had enslaved the Sidonians, and they were all Canaanites. But the Tyrians were not. The Tyrians were Israelites. So the children of Israel were told that the Canaanites would be thorns in their sides and pricks in their eyes. Back in the book of Judges, the book of Numbers. And this is a direct reference to that. This is a direct reference to the book of Judges, the book of Numbers, where the children of Israel failed to destroy all the Canaanites, and there would be thorns in their sides and pricks in their eyes, that this is a direct reference. Because these people are predominantly, these Sidonians are predominantly Canaanites.
And what was the city like originally Phoenician, and then it became Canaanite, and that sort of like now they're thorns?
I'm sorry, Sidon was originally Canaanite.
Oh, okay. I got that confused then. I was checking the word meaning, and the BDB definition got me confused. Because it
Sidon
says
was the son of Canaan.
Okay. The BDB says ancient Phoenician city on Mediterranean coast north of Tyre. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the problem with the word Phoenician. Yeah. Is that it's a geographical term strictly. It's not the name of any tribe. So the Israelites inhabited many of those Phoenician cities, and the Israelites were the famous Phoenicians of the Greek world in ancient times. But the Canaanites who dwelt in certain cities were also considered Phoenicians because it's strictly a geographical term.
I see.
Even Herodotus said that all of the colonies of Phoenicians that settled in Europe were from Tyre, and none of them were from Sidon. They were all from Tyre.
What was that? Sorry, where was that?
Herodotus.
Oh, Herodotus, okay.
Explains that all the Phoenician colonies in Europe were from Tyre.
User disconnected from your channel.
Tyre is not one of the places in Joshua or Judges where Canaanites were left. Only Sidon was. And Solomon later made slaves of them.
Which country did you say only place that had Canaanites left? Did you say the only place in Phoenicia that had Canaanites left was Sidon? Is that what you said?
Tyre did not have, if you read the places where the Canaanites were left in the books of Joshua and Judges,
yeah.
Tyre was not among them, but Sidon was.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And later on in Kings and Chronicles, we read that Solomon had enslaved the Sidonians, the Canaanites in Sidon.
Got it.
For diligent studying is off. I hope to get there someday. Keep track of it all. It's very hard.
So the Prince of Tyre isn't Satan, but instead Eden, the Garden of God, is basically just a metaphor for the Adamic oikoumene, or the Adamic world at the time. And that'll be demonstrated in Ezekiel chapter 31.
It almost seems like it's implying that he has preeminence in the oikoumene by saying that, like, because it mentions his riches within the Garden of God.
But Tyre was one of the most notable cities of the oikoumene, of the Adamic world at the time. It really was. And when the Babylonians had, even before that, right, in the Persian period, and I have a whole theory on this, it's difficult to prove because we don't have documents. When Xerxes, the Persians had taken over the Babylonian Empire, and they had taken over the whole region of Phoenicia and Tyre, and Tyre was subject to the Persians. And when Xerxes wanted to invade Greece, at virtually the same time, the Phoenicians of Carthage invaded Sicily. And this is actually explained by Herodotus to a degree. It's not in depth, but it's explained to a degree. And the only deduction I could make is that the Tyrians Herodotus had explained that the Phoenicians of the Mediterranean Sea in Africa had still been subservient to the people of Tyre because Tyre was the mother city. When the Persians wanted to invade Greece, the Carthaginians invaded Sicily at the same time and therefore prevented all of the Greeks of Sicily and Italy, who were more numerous than the Greeks of Greece, of what we know as Greece, it prevented them from coming to the assistance of the Greeks in Greece in their defense against Persia when Xerxes was invading Persia. So it seems like they must have been, it must have been coordinated, that they must have been in communication with one another, and the Carthaginians were still subservient to the Tyrians because Carthage had willingly invaded Sicily and Italy at the same time that the Persians were invading Greece. So what I'm saying is that there's evidence throughout Herodotus and later times that the Tyrians still had a lot of influence over the Phoenician colonies in the Mediterranean.
Would have been a daughter city, like daughter of Tyre is what it could have been called in the Bible.
Yes, Carthage would have been the daughter of Tyre.
You still here, David?
Yeah, we can probably end this here if David wants to, if he lets us.